Orlando and Sandy is brought to you on demand thanks to SCL Mortgage, the home of MySpecialMortgage.com. And good morning, welcome. Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin, 11th day of October. Or December, one of the two. 2019, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. It is still fall, officially. We're about 10 days away from the onset of winter. We have a lot of questions, and whenever we have a lot of questions, we seek out the good doctor, Dr. Rick Perea of Think One. He will be joining us in a matter of moments. Of all the things for you to be watching, Orlando Franklin, last night, you come into the studio today, and Evans and I are talking about the Nuggets, and they've lost 5 out of 6, and they had a bad road trip. They beat the Knicks. The three of us could find, and Dr. Perea is here in the studio, so that's why I'm referring to three of us. We'll add DeHuff, okay? And we'll pick up a fifth guy off the street, or maybe Evans will be our point guard, okay? We could beat the New York Knickerbockers the way the Nuggets did, okay? Yeah. But they lost the other three games on the trip. Boston, no disgrace. Really, last night, no disgrace. But Brooklyn the other day beat them 2-1-3 road trip. And if you aren't winning two-thirds of your games, you're not in position for home court advantage. You're not a top-four team.
Yep.
Basically, in either conference, to be honest. Your Toronto Raptors are in fifth place in the East with a record of 16-7. So it is very competitive. The top 10 teams are all really good. The bottom 10 teams are really bad. And then there are the Portlands and the San Antonios and teams that have been good in the past that may have slipped back a little bit. You come in and that's not even close to being the basketball story of the night.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I watched the Nuggets last night as well, but for me, it's Tuesday night, so I play in a pool league. And last night, it just so happened that my team had to play against the best team in the league. So, needless to say, I wasn't really focused on pool because I knew I was going to get my head kicked in on the table. I think the best I shot yesterday was a 5. You know, there was one game that a guy broke and ran. I played against the best stick in the house last night. I just started playing pool a couple months ago, so I just got embarrassed.
But you've got the terminology down pat.
Yeah. So now when I'm, not getting my head kicked in on the table, I'm watching the games and I'm seeing the Nuggets and they're battling back and they're down for a lot of that second half, but they're trying to battle back. But I'm looking at the other TV, and they got Texas Tech against Louisville.
Right. Number one team in the country, Louisville.
Louisville's number one team in the country, and Texas Tech just came out from the opening whistle, that opening, tip-off, and just pedaled to the metal and kicked the teeth in of Louisville. Did not want to back down. She said, hey, you know what? We know that you guys are number one in the country, but we got something special going here. And for me, that's the biggest story because it's the underdog. You know, it's not that the
We've
Nuggets
had a lot
that we
of that.
Thought about the Nuggets being such a good team and never dropping a game. No, I want to see the underdog to go play a team that they have no business even competing with, that people are saying, hey, this is going to be a blowout. And now they come and they turn it around and they win by multiple points or they win by double digits. That's the biggest story for me.
Duke got upset this year. Kentucky lost at home to Evansville. We've seen a lot of that.
Yep.
We've seen a lot of that. Michigan State's been surprised a couple of times this year. The only team in the country that hasn't been shocked and lost a game they had no business losing is by Kansas Jayhawks, of course, who lost to Duke in their first game by 2 points after turning the ball over 28 times and have won every game since.
You're a Jayhawks
and beat
fan?
Mighty Milwaukee last night at Allen Fieldhouse.
You're a Jayhawks fan?
Well, my son went there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I never knew that.
So
awesome.
I'm a little disenchanted for reasons I've explained previously with Kansas's battle with the NCAA and the constant struggle to keep players eligible. But this team seems to be a nice team. There's no controversy around it. And they're the only college basketball team that's really avoided the losing. But I mean, I love CU. and they lost at Kansas on Saturday. No problem. Yeah. Kansas doesn't lose much at Allen Fieldhouse. But then they're home last night to Northern Iowa, and they're still ranked 24th. Even after losing to Kansas, they only dropped four spots in the rankings from 20 to 24, and they lose to Northern Iowa. And I'm saying, no, not at home. You can't lose games like that at home. And so it almost every team in the country that was supposed to be good or really good, and the point is no great teams. But that Texas Tech is in the Big 12, and they're saying Kansas has a clear run to the Big 12 title,
yeah,
which they'd won something like 14 years in a row. They didn't win last year. They're trying to start a new streak this year. And I say, oh, I'm hearing they have no competition. Never heard a word about Texas Tech. I did catch a sliver of that game.
Now you're going to hear about Texas Tech.
Texas Tech's pretty good.
Yeah, now you're going to hear about
Texas Tech's pretty good. Kansas beat Dayton in a tournament out in Maui a week, 10 days ago, whatever it was. And Dayton's good. And you think, Dayton, how can they be good? They're a mid-major. They keep their players.
Yeah.
They played together for 3 or 4 years.
That's the difference between a lot of these other schools.
And Texas Tech is like that.
Are not good. Because Texas Tech right now, you wouldn't think of them being that great. But when you have guys that go in there and they play together for 3 years and all of a sudden it's their senior year, they're ready to make a run. They know everything about the player next to them. They know everything about that whole team. With these other big-time colleges now, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Kansas, these guys are coming in and it's one and done. And you talk about the whole Kansas experiment and the situation there with having trouble keeping guys eligible. Well, guys are coming in saying, hey, I'm only here for 1 year. You know, I just got to stay as close to eligible as possible because I'm not coming back to school.
Well, the problem is before they get there, they become questionable, if not ineligible, because of the way they've been recruited. But that's the story for another day.
It happens.
It's recruiting. Yes, it's recruiting.
Whatever you could do to get that person to sign on that paper.
And that gets us to the Bill Belichick deal, which we'll talk about, the New England Patriots with Dr. Rick Perea here in a few moments. But the Nuggets losing to the 76ers and losing Jamal Murray, and maybe this will give those on the team who have been disappointments this year, and I will enumerate them. Gary Harris, all guards, by the way. Malik Beasley hasn't been as good or as consistent as the Nuggets would have hoped. I love Monte Morris, but he hasn't been the same player this year that he was a year ago, for example, at this time. Maybe these guys will get going. The Nuggets still seem lethargic. They play with no pace. Jokic, I thought, was pretty good last night against Embiid. Embiid had fancier numbers. Jokic was +8. Embiid was -8. But the fact of the matter is, on a night when Murray is out most of the game with what they are describing, and maybe you or the good doctor, I know he isn't that kind of doctor, can help me with this. What the hell is a trunk contusion? Ever had a trunk contusion?
Well, when I hear trunk, I think back. So, and I know what contusions are, but
I've never heard the term trunk contusion. I've never heard of anybody described as being injured due to a trunk contusion. But on a night when Murray isn't there for most of the game, Jokic has got to score more than 15 points. He's just got to score more than 15 points. The good doctor is coming on. We've got John Elway talking about a variety of subjects, and we'll do with the good doctor what we did the last time he was here. We'll play the sound on certain subjects from John Elway, and then we'll get your reaction and the good doctor's reaction. What Elway is really trying to say, if it sounds different than what he actually said. That's upcoming. The good doctor, Rick Perea, in studio on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin, 915, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. Dr. Rick Perea, our guest in studio from Think One, the behavior design specialist. Dr. Rick Perea is one of the foremost organization and performance psychologists in the country. You can reach him via Think One at Think One, number four, Y-O-U dot org. Dr. Perea, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And we have Lock Mania.
Yeah.
This week. Talked off air about this.
Right.
Give me just your impressions over the last 2 weeks of Locke himself and the fascinating reaction to Drew Locke.
Yeah. Well, great to be here, Sandy, in Orlando. You know, I was watching him from the very time he was activated, and I got to tell you, I've been very impressed. And not so, I mean, the football stuff is obvious. I get that. But what I've been impressed with is his nonverbal communication. You know, Sandy, as you know, in Orlando, I observe quarterbacks. I watch them. I watch them nonverbally. For me, that's much more accurate than the verbal piece and even than their behavior. So let me give you an example. When he breaks huddle and walks up to the line of scrimmage, his body language is convicted. He does it with strength and conviction. He's patient. He waits at the line. He waits for people. He puts them in motion. He's patient at the line. And then, you know, then he goes through his cadence. That tells me a lot about a quarterback. Most rookies can't wait to get that snap, the ball snapped, because they get to move. They get to release what we call somatic anxiety. Soma means body. Somatic anxiety builds up lactic acid in the body, and that's why people get tense. But I noticed from the get, that kid has some moxie to him. Now, I'm not saying he's going to light the world on fire, but I am saying that he shows an unusual level of calmness in his soma, in his body. And that tells me that when he goes to throw, he doesn't have much muscle tension in his body. That's what's called the parasympathetic side of the autonomic nervous system, the calm side. And when he doesn't have tension, his throwing motion is pure, he's on target, and he's going to be successful.
Doc, I want to ask you about this team as a whole, because, you know, once Vic Fangio got here, you hear him talk about the Band-Aid fixes. Then the Broncos end up going and get Joe Flacco. Then you end up, now the draft comes around, you draft a quarterback. You also re-sign Kevin Hogan this past offseason. You bring in Brett Rippon. You have so many different quarterbacks and so many different moving pieces. Now, once the season starts, you got, obviously, you got Hogan that's not here no more. Then you go into the season. You're losing these games, these tight, close games, and you have a different quarterback. And now you're on your third starting quarterback, and you thought it was Brandon Allen. Once he got out there, he was able to perform really well, and you hope that the play calling was a little bit better in the Minnesota second half. But then you saw in the Buffalo game, Brandon Allen really struggled. Now you're seeing this Drew Locke, and this Drew Locke mania. Everybody's loving what he's doing.
Yeah.
I want you to talk about the whole aspect of this team, what you've seen from this team as a whole this whole season.
Yeah. You know, I think at first they tried to cover their butts, if you will, by, you know, quarterback by committee, if you will. You know, they had several of them to make sure they covered their, right, you know what. But I think all along they have been looking at Drew Locke as their guy. And, you know, it's interesting because for me, you know, what I do in the NFL is I do a lot of personality assessments on players, especially quarterbacks. And I know in the past, you know, for example, with Paxton Lynch, you know, he had some weak spots. I was at the combine, and I know he had some gaps when it came to the mental side and the anxiety side of regulating himself. But they chose to pick him anyway, and that's their choice, and I get with that. But it seems like they've learned their lesson, because this kid that they got in Drew Locke, I think, is a real deal. But I think that the whole team overall, I think in their mind, they were looking at this as a growth year, as a processing year. And, you know, Drew, I think, is going to give him some stability. And again, I'm not saying, Orlando, that he's going to save the world and he's their guy. But I like what I see so far out of him, because, you know, we've talked about this last time I was here. There's inconsistency on the offensive line. There's been a couple. Chubb's been hurt on defense. Vaughn's been hurt on defense. So there's been some inconsistency. But I think this team can hit a groove. I really do. I think going forward, they have a chance to win a few of these last games. And they do that, they go into the offseason with some momentum.
Hey, how important is it for your quarterback to have that moxie, that swagger? Because that's the biggest difference that I've noticed with Drew Locke since he's started these last two games.
Yes.
And I haven't seen this in a Bronco uniform at the quarterback position since Peyton Manning walked out
right
the court. So how important is it that Drew Locke has that?
It's vital.
You know, it's a great question, Orlando, because we undervalue that in quarterbacks, okay? You know, we'll look at their arm. We'll look at their completion ratio. I mean, percentage. We'll look at them, their performance, the quantitative assessments in college. But most NFL teams don't know how to measure, quote-unquote, moxie. And what you do, it's called self-efficacy. It's your belief system. We study that in performance psychology. He's off the chart with it. He's great. And that's outstanding. You know, I came out of college in 83. I was an undrafted free agent linebacker. But I came out in 83 with Marino and Elway and Easton and all those guys. It was the year of the quarterbacks. And I think the thing that set John and Dan Marino apart, and when I was down in Miami the last 3 years, I got to know Dan really well. His office was right down the hall from mine. This thing that set them apart, yeah, Danny had a great arm. Yeah, John had a great arm. But it was that moxie. They had a belief system that when, you know, first and 10 on the 2 yard line, and we got 98 yards to go, and Elway says we got him right where we want him. That kind of belief system, that kind of moxie is really the key. And so I see that in Drew. So I think it bodes well for the Broncos going forward.
Let's hear what John Elway had to say this week about how Drew Locke handled himself, what the good doctor is talking about here, especially on the road, and how well the team responded to Drew Locke.
Well, he did it on the road against a good football team. I think that, you know, it was something that, you know, going on, it's crowd noise, dealing with the crowd noise, and you know, really did a nice job, and team played very well around him. You know, offensive line did a nice job, and Noah had a great game, played very well, made some big plays, and so it was an all-around good game, and, you know, it was good to see Drew take that next step.
All right. That was John Elway, and...
When I look at how Drew Locke played, it was excellent. You know, you go on the road and you're able to go when it's your team, you're 46 against the world, and everybody's just picking the Texans to lose or the Texans to win that football game. You handle yourself really well in that circumstance and in that situation. For me, like I said, it was always important for me to see how week one start goes to week two. For me, and week two being on the road, week two dealing with the crowd noise, how were you going to handle that? And if you remember last week, Sandy, I said, listen, he should be able to have the same communication that he had last week because he's operating off that wristband. And I just think that right now this whole organization is getting behind Drew Locke in the way that they're going about their business with him.
And LA is looking, Rick, at how the team responded around him.
Yes.
Is he looking at the right thing?
Absolutely. You know, great quarterbacks who have that moxie, who have that self-efficacy, that belief system, pick everybody up around him. You know, the one thing we study, guys, inside in performance psychology is mood. How important mood is on a team and how important mood influences everybody. Just like you see teams go on a run of losses, there's a contagion to mood. And sometimes when everybody's got their chin in the dirt, everybody's following that mood and vice versa. If everybody's up and you look at your quarterback and he's got belief, he's got moxie, you know, you hook your trailer to that, Sandy, and that makes a huge difference.
And the three-letter word that we've almost never heard the last 4 years was uttered many times in the locker room after the game, and that three-letter word was fun.
Oh, there you go.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
And you
know, we can enjoy this victory. When we won our first game earlier this year, we were told, well, that's to be expected. The Broncos are supposed to win. We didn't have any fun with it. Now we've been liberated.
Right.
Now we've been given permission to have fun.
What a
concept.
You know, we have a term in psychology. It's called reciprocal determinism. And that's formal for fun equals success. Success equals fun. So, you know, which comes first, the cart or the horse? You know, when you have success, it's fun. And when you have fun, you're successful. So I think when people bring a mood, a positive mood, like this morning, I went to my office and I serenaded someone in my office because I was just feeling so good. I wanted to sing. I sang a song called Reasons by Earth, Wind, and Fire. I just had to belt it out because I was feeling so good.
Spare us of that. I mean, the fact that you did it in your office.
I can sing,
please,
Sandy.
Spare us.
I can sing.
Please,
so anyway, but this
is
mood.
Sang during the break.
So I got the mood right in the office. I got us in the right place. And that's key. Quarterbacks are very visual position, the most visual position on a team. And so when a quarterback has that moxie, it becomes contagion with an N for the listeners out there. It becomes contagion for the rest of the team. That is very powerful. So John's on to something right there.
All right, we'll come back. And you know what, fellas? Drew Lock missed out on the AFC Offensive Player of the Week designation. Guess who got it? It's a guy Rick Perea knows very, very well. That's coming next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy.
Dr. Rick Perea in studio as our guest, Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin. And we mentioned going into the break, Dr. Perea, that Drew Lock, though you were lauding him appropriately, I think, in the first segment with us, missed out on the AFC Offensive Player of the Week award. That went to
Ryan
someone
Tannehill.
You know very, very well.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. We had him in Miami. I worked with him directly. He's a great, great kid. Very talented. You know, a lot of people don't realize how athletic he is. He played receiver at A&M. You know, he ran a 4.55 40 at the combine. The kid's a great athlete. He just didn't have any consistency in his coaching. And then when Gase had him, who we, you know, figure is a quarterback whisperer, right? We had him, you know, the 10-6 season, we had him going really good and the team really good. He got hurt late in that season. We lost in the playoffs to Pittsburgh. But then the next year in training camp, he hurts his knee again, Sandy. And so if he would have been consistent with, you know, not getting hurt, Ryan would have lit it up in Miami.
So and Adam Gase might still be the head coach.
Exactly. And I might not be here in Denver with you right now. I might be in Miami. So it's funny how things happen. But the kid can play. Make no mistake about it. He can play. And Sandy, even more than that, he's a great human being.
At the quarterback position, especially the most that I, since I've been around in the NFL, I see that those guys, they could be on their game, but one thing could change, and then all of a sudden they go down in the rut, and their career might never be, ever be the same.
Right.
I want to ask you, when you see Baker Mayfield last year, and he's lighting it up, and he comes out, and all of a sudden you're like, man, it looks like Cleveland has finally got their quarterback.
Right.
But now you're seeing this year, and he got more weapons. The Odell Beckham gets right in there, and you're thinking that, oh,
Jarvis
my gosh,
he's
going to be so much better. Jarvis Landry, they add Kareem Hunt. You're thinking that this team's going to be so much better offensively, but you're seeing the ruts. What do you have to say about that from a psychological standpoint? Is he going to be able to overcome that after this year, or are we going to see a situation like you saw with Tannehill where it takes a couple years to get back in the groove of things?
Well, you know, Orlando, the key is I know both those quarterbacks, Tannehill and Bake, and I'll say this. You know, Bake can be a little moody. Let's be honest. He can be a little moody. He needs a coach like he had last year, excuse me, in Kenny Zampezi, who kept him grounded, who kept him grounded in his fundamentals. A quarterback like Bake needs that because his personality is like he's a swashbuckler. He wants to go out there and just throw it around the yard and just thinks he can create plays. And he can, but he's got to at times go through his read progression in a five-step, seven-step drop through that in their offense. I think people don't realize how important a quarterback coach is to a quarterback. An offensive coordinator is to a quarterback for mood, for the psychological part. Yeah. And if your quarterback coach is your frat buddy, for example, instead of your coach, then you're just going to be, you know, playing GA most of the time, and you're not going to get the things done that need to be done, Orlando. So I think for someone like Bake, with his personality, he needs a foundational aspect like a Kenny Zampezi, who's a fundamentalist.
Let's go back to John Elway, speaking earlier this week, and talks about Drew Lock and these moments, at least early on, not being too big for him.
Well, I mean, I think we see that physically he can play in the NFL and has a chance to be a very good quarterback. We'll just have to take it one step at a time and see how he continues to improve. But obviously, with what we've seen in the first two games, it's not too big for him. And you know, again, getting back to the physical side of it, he's got that ability. So we'll continue to take strides each week. But we're excited that see where Drew is, obviously.
And, I want to get your response and Dr. Perea's as to whether this validates now the decision to trade back from 10 so you could trade up in the second round and draft Drew Lock.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what John Elway says about Drew Lock, the moment not being too big for him, I agree with him. You know, and for me, I've seen everything that I can see out of Drew Lock right now. The only one thing I want to see is when you do face adversity in this league, how do you bounce back the week after? Because right now,
He's started two games, and he's won two football games. And you see the energy with this team. But what happens now when you go out there and you throw three interceptions, and now you give a, you take five sacks? How do you respond a week after? So that's the only thing that I'm looking to see from Drew Lock, how he responds from a really rough game. But as far as what you just said, does this validate, you know, moving back from 10? Yeah, I would say so, because you found a great player in A.J. Johnson. Noah Fant is coming along, and if he can continue to have days like he had last week, you're talking four targets, four receptions, 113 yards, and a touchdown. And the touchdown, he had to show some concentration, and even on the first play of the game, that long run, he had to really dial it in and show some concentration, and we're seeing the improvement. It definitely validates John Elway moving back, but you still can't close the door at the quarterback position, I feel like, because the one way you can do that is to see how Drew Lock bounces back from a game that he just goes out there and just lays an egg. And until I see him bounce back from a game like that, I say you still look at the quarterback position, because when you do find your quarterback, you got him for the next 10 or 15 years in the league.
Yeah, those are very good points, Orlando. I think that when Drew Lock exhibits the calmness, the moxie that we've seen in him, I think that'll carry over. The very definition of self-efficacy in psychology is to be able to fight through adversity. So adversity's included there. And I think he will. I think he'll be a kid that if he throws a few picks, he'll be able to come back from that. I see that in him. You know, I heard that he was a really good high school basketball player, too. He scored like 24 points a game, something like that.
Very good.
But, you know, that means something to me, too. Because, I mean, basketball, you have to regulate yourself.
Yes.
You know, it's not a sport where you just go out there and tear people's heads off. You have to regulate yourself. So that's good for the psychology of him being able to regulate, get himself on that parasympathetic side of the autonomic, which is the calm side, so he can, you know, his somatic anxiety, his body is completely relaxed, so when he's in his throwing motion, he's in his drop back, very precision in terms of his fundamentals.
A quick question for you before we let you run. From your perspective, which is better for the Broncos, winning some games down the stretch here or improving their draft position?
Both. How about that?
But the more you win, worse your draft position becomes. I think,
how about this, Sandy? Playing well and maybe losing a couple games close. Just developing that self-efficacy. They're playing well. They're getting better. Not making winning an overall outcome goal, but a process goal. Because I think as long as they're developing and getting better, that's the most important thing. And then just focusing on process. You know, you're Saban talk about process so much. If they just focus on process, each position, offensive line, defensive line, all those different positions, getting better, developing, see who you have in your personnel. Know your personnel. We call that KYP. Know who you have going into next year so you can draft. But I will tell you something right now. I like the looks of this team. There's a certain feel to it right now. I'm not saying, again, don't get me wrong, they're not world beaters, but they're coming along. And as long as they develop and keep that a focus as a process goal and not an outcome goal, they're on the right path.
So I have to improve my attitude about this team. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, focus on the process, Sandy.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Puria.
Thank you very much.
He's
Thank
the best. Dr. Puria is from ThinkOne, the behavior design specialist. He is the organization and performance psychologist for the Stars, and it's thinkoneforyou.org. When we come back, we'll talk a little hockey. How about the Avalanche? If they win tonight, they are in first place, not only in their division, but in the Western Conference. That's next.
It's Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
We turn now to Adrian Dater from ColoradoHockeyNow.com, our Avalanche insider at 9:48 here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Adrian, good morning. With all of the injuries and with a bit of a disappointing effort the other night against Calgary, the fact remains if the Avalanche win tonight, they will move into first place in the Western Conference.
That's right, Sandy. It's been a great story in a sense that we all were worried sick about this team with so many key injuries. The fact is, they withstood that. They did have a couple bumps in the road along the way, but they withstood it. got their guys back for the most part. And you're right, a win tonight over the Philadelphia Flyers, which will be on NBCSN, folks, so everybody can see the game. All you suffering Comcast people out there can watch the game. And, yeah, it's going to be a fun night, I think. 7:30 start, a little later than usual, and I expect a very impressive night at the Pepsi Center tonight in a good hockey game.
Adrian, a couple days ago, we saw the Avs lose to the Flames, and this is a team that already beat the Flames twice this year and kicked them out the playoffs last year. What do you think happened? Was that just attributed to being on the road and them coming back over here to the Midwest? Or I just thought it was sloppy hockey, personally, but I want to hear your take on how you felt that game went.
You know, I've heard that first game back of the road trip thing a lot. And, yeah. You know, for the Avalanche, it may actually be something. Avalanche players have told me that when they go back east, they have a big advantage going back east, they feel.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They're so used to it. Their lungs are better breathing all that mountain air. When they go back east, they feel a lot quicker. And their record back east might indicate that. You know, they haven't lost in Boston in regulation since 1998.
Yeah. They kill it in Boston every year.
Yeah. And they usually do pretty well back east. When they come back west, I've heard some guys say that they don't feel as good.
Yeah.
That the lungs don't feel as good. A guy like Nikita Zadorov, too, he told me, he didn't tell me, he was telling another reporter, but I was eavesdropping a little bit yesterday. He said that when he comes back to Denver, his jaw hurts more because the mountain air, it's higher, it hurts more. He's still wearing that facial shield. So he said, I'm in more pain.
Yep.
That said, that shouldn't be all those excuses aside. It should have played a little better the other night. Calgary, I was worried about that game anyway, though, because they were playing without Makar for the first time.
Yep.
You know, Nazem Kadri's absence is a big thing.
Yes.
He's back tonight. That second line center is so key to that team.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just an off night, but they still got a point. It was a good night overall to get a point at it.
We saw, I think for the first time this year, Francois have a very shaky outing. You mentioned Makar being out for the first time as an Avalanche skater, and he's clearly their number one defenseman. And you referenced Kadri, but, Eric Johnson's still out. We heard day-to-day at first, and now maybe it's week-to-week, month-to-month. Nobody knows. The shoulder injury for Makar doesn't appear to be awfully serious, but you are missing Grubauer, and who knows how long he'll be out. And it's different when you know you're getting the start, and you may even be playing for a while. And, he stopped the first 14 shots the other night, and then he couldn't stop a beach ball after that.
Yeah, I know it was an off night. I do think Grubauer is back, though, and healthy, and he may play tonight. I guess we're going to know at the morning skate pretty soon.
Yeah.
But he practiced fully yesterday and said he feels good. So I did ask him, are you worried about a recurring injury here? If it's a groin, we don't know what it is. But he said, no, it's not worried about it. So I think they'll be all right. I think Francois, just had a bad night in a sense. He made a few good saves though. I've liked his game overall for the most part. I think, it's going to be okay in goal. Eric Johnson should start skating later this week, but I think it's going to be another week at least before we even have any hope of him playing at all. And, other than those two guys, Makar, Johnson, two pretty important guys, I know.
Yeah.
they theoretically could be all healthy again within a week. Now,
sure.
Who's going to go down next in the interim? Not in Boston.
Right.
Adrian, with all these injuries that you're talking about right now, the Makar, the Grubauer, the EJs, and, Kadri getting ready to skate again, who's, and even earlier in the season, the Landeskog's, the Ratton, who's the one guy that this team just cannot afford to have get dinged up? Who's the guy that's holding this team together and why?
Well, it's got to be Nathan MacKinnon, right? He's the one guy who hasn't gone down. Oh, no, what a jinxed up.
Right.
He's the guy who definitely carried the team.
Yep.
He's the MVP of the league, I think, right now.
Oh,
I think
no
he's
doubt.
Won the Hart Trophy.
Hey, I have to ask you very quickly before I let you go a question about that you would be well equipped to answer. I was talking after the game the other night with our friend Peter McNabb, and we were talking about what happened with about 17 minutes to go in the game the other night. They're down 4-2, and McKinnon says pocket or something like that, and just takes over the game the last 17 minutes, just dominates the game. It seems he's out there for at least two out of every three shifts, and yep. he just takes over the game. Yes, they lose in overtime, but McKinnon is responsible for that point. And I was saying to Peter McNabb, was Forsberg like that? And Peter said, nah, Peter was a different personality. Now, he could take over games, but it'd just be by kind of the force of his talent, and he'd kind of shrug and say, I guess the boys need me a little bit, and he'd start to bang people around. But Peter Forsberg, as you well know, never thirsted to score goals. Nathan McKinnon right. thirsts to score goals.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Peter could take over a game if he wanted to, though, and he did.
Oh, no doubt, and he did. Yeah. We saw him
do it. I get your point. Like, he didn't just say, Peter always wanted to get more guys involved.
Yes.
He was an assist. Exactly. And Nathan was like, screw this. I'm scoring yes. the goals, and we're yes. going to get at least
exactly.
a point. Yeah, that is a fair point.
And I'm saying Forsberg is more like Jokic with the Nuggets. You know, he's looking to make other people better. He doesn't think shot. And sometimes you wish Peter would do that more often, what he was capable of doing. Nathan McKinnon, you don't have to worry about his attitude. He will get angry. And he'll communicate that anger, as Jared Bednar has found out a couple of times.
Oh, absolutely, and I've seen it. I mean, you don't want to be around Nathan McKinnon after he loses a game in the locker room.
No.
He doesn't answer to me. It's often a very loud slam of his footlocker door.
Yep.
And that's fine. You know, I like that kind of guy. So, you know, don't need to talk to me. That's fine. He is a very driven guy now. He wants to win.
Yes.
I mean, I talked to him yesterday in the locker room. He's just like, you know, the guy just dialed in, as he said. He wants to win, and he had a good quote last week saying he'd take less money to on his next
yeah.
deal. To, you know, I good on that reporter who got that. I was somewhere else in the locker room when they said that to some Forbes guy, I guess. He's driven to win. He wants to be like his buddy Sidney Crosby.
Yes.
You know, that's his buddy.
Yes.
That's his yep. mentor. Now, he's done everything Crosby's done in some senses, but he hasn't won a Stanley Cup. He hasn't won a Hart Trophy. He wants all that now, I think. And he wants to be able to go with Sid on the golf course this summer or any summer and say, hey, look at my ring, too.
Yes.
And not feel left out. And that's a big, big deal to him now, and he knows his window is here, and he wants to get it.
Adrian, our thanks. As always, yeah, we'll see you at the game.
Thanks, guys. Take
Appreciate
care.
It. There he goes. Adrian Dater, ColoradoHockeyNow.com, our Avalanche insider. When we come back, the Drew Locke effect. Is he making the offensive line look better, or has the offensive line made Drew Locke look a little better in the last couple of weeks? We'll talk about that next.